The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. It's Friday, end of the week, weekend coming up. Hope you have a nice one. We have a wonderful program tonight with William Tompkins on for the first 2 hours. We're going to spend some time as Bill continues to tell his story, and what a story it is. Revelations, disclosure, all kinds of things to titillate the mind, as they say, intrigue you, certainly. And certainly entertain in a way that is really hadn't been done before. Not like this. Bill Tompkins is 93 and as sharp as I am or you are, and he is amazing. His life has been extraordinary. On the deck with us tonight, let's see. George Filer, are you there?
I'm there.
Where's that? How are you, George?
I'm fine.
Good. You sound a little distant there.
Yeah. I'm upset about the news in Dallas and so on.
Yeah, not good. Funniest thing, oddly enough, last night early in the program I said, because of all the attention to Hillary Clinton and James Comey, and all, I said, watch, there will be another tragedy. They will divert people away from that and broom that right off the front pages. And within an hour... It was my fault, but got word about Dallas, yeah. What do you think, George? You're a former career military man. Here we are again, now, oddly enough, in Dallas, Texas, and we're being told a lone gunman did all this damage. He's not around to talk, of course, because they sent a robot in there with a bomb and blew him up. What do you think? One guy? Five police officers dead, six or seven wounded. That's a lot of damage.
Yeah, it seemed logical that there was more than one.
I concur entirely. And last night, and during hour three tonight, Professor James Fetzer will be back. We'll talk about this in detail. But last night, the Dallas police announced that they had three suspects in custody. And this fourth... who they blew up, was still at large in a parking garage. So I don't know. It's all, again, one of those things that makes you wonder. Just makes you wonder. Another lone gunman.
I personally was very upset watching the news yesterday before all that happened, that it's almost like they were asking people to do things in retaliation to the terrible police. I don't know if anybody else felt that. Well, I have talked to several people who felt that way, that the news really was really hitting hard on what the, you know, police were doing and these stops and so on.
Oh,
and
well,
they're showing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The police are out of control, George. They've already killed 509 people just this year in 6 months. That's ridiculous. There's something really wrong here. And there is a lack of sympathy from some toward police in general. They do take an oath to protect and serve. They do respond in the line of duty. And I will say this, the reports I've read about the Dallas police, they deserve a great deal of credit because they did run toward the firing. They didn't do what they did in Orlando and sit on their butts for 3 hours before they decided to go into that club. Tough to say. And we all, of course, have great sympathy for the families and loved ones of those who were lost. That's always something that we hope goes without saying. But the police in general are not helping themselves much by killing people, shooting them in their cars, shooting them at point-blank range when they're on the ground. I mean, it's pretty crazy. When you see this stuff, it's you kind of say, well, I'm surprised it hadn't happened like this before, and there may be other, unfortunately, other attacks on police. It's action-reaction. Anyway, glad you're on board tonight. Let's say hello to Frank Chile. Hello, Frank.
Good evening, Jeff. Another wonderful evening to share disclosure.
Yeah, and your pal, William Tompkins, is creating quite a stir all around the world with his disclosure and his conversations here. They're being very heavily listened to and commented on, and they're actually giving some people great hopes and feelings of inspiration, which is nice.
Yes. So true.
Very good. All right. Well, let's go right to Bill and get going. We have a lot to talk about tonight. So, Todd, if you would turn George and Frank down, and let's welcome William back to the program. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Welcome from Alpha Centauri. up here, we don't do that kind of things that you're doing in Dallas. Okay?
Yeah. Well, look, it's not Dallas. We have to think of the 275,000 Americans who have now either died or are disabled after the useless, horrific slaughter called the Gulf War. This species of ours has tremendous weaknesses and flaws, William. Go back to World War II. Go back to the Korean War. Go back to Vietnam. I mean, we don't seem to have much trouble killing each other as a species. No other species seems to do this.
Gosh, you're absolutely right. I really don't want to start this program with that subject, but frankly, I'd like to tell a little story.
Go ahead, Bill. That's fine. This is Bill Tompkins' program, and we are all part of the same tapestry of life on this planet, so let's talk.
I'd like to take Jeff and you fellas there and everybody that's listening to this program all over the planet. I'd like to take everybody on a trip. I'd like to leave the planet here and go out into the other side of the galaxy. Everybody leave and go out to the galaxy. We're going to be a different race out there that's much smarter than the people down on Earth, okay?
Fine by me.
And actually, we're living a utopian life on the other side of the galaxy, and we have the privilege of advanced electronics and communication where we can look out into the other side of the galaxy, hate to say it, but over by that planet Earth, and we can see what's going on mm-hmm. with our equipment. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm going to use an example. Those two fellows that live next to you, each other, out there in Hollywood. Now, over in California, out in Hollywood. Now, the one fellow is really upset with his neighbor because he has a dog that barks all the time. And this really upsets him. And he has a very difficult time accepting this neighbor. Now, it's a little further than that. Driving down the freeway towards San Diego from Hollywood, one driver is racing down the freeway, and he cuts another fellow off, another driver. That driver, really upset, short fuse, he floors it. He takes off, and he goes forward of the first fellow and cuts him off. And then the 12 cars behind them pile up into a massive wreck because two drivers had short fuses.
Right.
Okay. Now, then this other part. Some fellows in California were upset with some of the other people in Nevada. They can't even remember why it was they were mad at them. But they didn't get along with their own neighbor in the next state.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I hate to do this, but look at other countries on the planet. They can't get along with each other either. They all have short fuses. They're into a situation where they're constantly upset with other people. And what this gets into, and we can see all this from the other side of the galaxy. We watched the whole show. We've watched it for thousands of years. These people never stop having wars. Not that once in a while there are wars on the other side of the planet. But that's all these people do. Look at their history. We've watched them for thousands of years.
Now, from your perspective on the other side of the galaxy, watching this planet we call Earth and watching the wars and the death and the suffering that we perpetuate and perpetrate upon each other, the end is nowhere in sight, of course. What are your thoughts about even coming over here to visit Earth?
Well, actually, we're really not interested in that. We sort of watch this as a soap opera, okay? We really don't. We don't want to get involved with them. We watch it, but look at this same situation slightly different. Some other extraterrestrials do go over there to planet Earth. They've been doing that for thousands of years too, and they've been using the planet as a laboratory for their agendas. They use the planet for a laboratory.
Perfect petri dish. Yes.
Absolutely. And so we have to look at this situation and say, gosh, I don't think those people get along with each other at all. They can't stop fighting each other. Now, okay, we'll admit, a quarter away on the other side of the galaxy, there's some really bad extraterrestrials. And yes, they've been dropping gases on planet Earth for thousands of years, so that they don't even know what their history is. And not only they don't know what their history is, but they've been given the gas that gives them the short fuse. And this also gives them short lives, which to those other people a quarter away around the galaxy, this is their agenda to control these people on planet Earth. Oh my gosh. What are we into here? This gets to be sort of who's to blame? Okay? Those people on Earth have short fuses. But are
these fuses
being given to them?
Right.
Maybe they're not as bad as we thought. But certainly they need to control their own planet and not have other people control it.
Well said.
Uh, I hate to get into this kind of thing, but it just seems like we may not be realizing that we're being used, that maybe we have our minds controlled. Nobody wants to believe that because everybody says, nobody's controlling my mind.
Yes.
And I say the same thing. But just maybe most people are controlled. Their minds are controlled. They do what they're told. And they're not being given information. What they do get are simply not the truth.
Oh, Bill, you couldn't have said it better. They're absolutely controlled by the media of all kinds. They are controlled. They are told what to think, how to think, when to think. And many of them are being taught now not to think, just to react. So that's our
You're
next
right.
generation, which is very sad. Now, I've got a little story here that I've got up on the site, and it's very important. And as all of you know who watch Vladimir Putin, he's a very calm, a very taciturn man. He doesn't display emotions often. He's soft-spoken. He's extremely intelligent. He's easily the world's top statesman internationally. He, in St. Petersburg, got to the point when he was meeting with the international press of losing his temper. He lost it. He started to talk very loudly and very animatedly at the International Press Corps. And basically, he said, "What is wrong with you people?" And here's a direct quote, "I don't know how to get through to you." What is he talking about? He then said, "How do you not understand that the world is being pulled in an irreversible direction?" That's a quote. And where is it being pulled? World War III. What this country, unbeknownst to the vast majority of its earthlings here, is doing with NATO is pressuring and encircling Russia to the extent that Vladimir Putin has twice that I know of said that he will not tolerate the existence of NATO American so-called defensive missile systems on the Russian border. Vladimir Putin doesn't lie. He's a man of his word. I fully expect him to take these missile command and control systems and the actual hardware out with missiles, with attack jet aircraft, with whatever. It's his right. He is being threatened. If this country, Bill, were lined all along the Canadian and Mexican border with Russian so-called defensive missiles, do you think we'd have a right to go in there and take them out? Hell yes, and we would. That's exactly what we are doing, what we are doing to Russia and the Russian people and Vladimir Putin. We are pushing him, and he said again, "I don't know how to get through to you people. These reporters will not tell the truth about what's going on and what's being done to push us all toward the final conflagration." I rest my case.
Absolutely, and he's being pushed beyond his acceptance. This is upside down, and it just doesn't seem. Many of the NATO nations don't understand what he was saying. This is a very, very dangerous thing, and here we are again. Almost implementing a war. This is not the way to do it. Our learning curve seems to be very flat.
Oh, indeed.
Tremendously devastating condition that we're putting ourselves into.
Yeah. One more quote. "You people do not feel the impending danger." And they don't. The West is lulled into a state of ignorance and idiocy by its media. We don't know. The American people aren't told. That's it. Now we lose five people. That's a tragedy in Dallas. Every year on America's highways, Bill, we lose 45,000 dead. And no one says anything. Nothing.
Yes.
Talk about priorities. This is a media issue again. So, okay, enough. We can take this wherever you'd like to. You're the guest of honor, sir. So, have at it.
Oh, okay. I think it would be appropriate to take a different approach. And I'd like to discuss again with the Russian situation. Where back in the 60s, it became necessary to address the Soviet Union because obviously they were going to carry out some sort of a war program.
Right.
And so the United States made the decision to increase the capability of ballistic missiles. So we have the ICBM missiles, which have the range to go to Russia from the United States. These are underground all over the United States, the bases.
Right.
There was another way to possibly help the situation. So there was a bid given to the Germans in NASA, who had developed for years in Germany the V-2 rockets. And these V-2 rockets, they were not ICBMs. And so they had a shorter range.
Right.
And so it was decided, and the Air Force put out bids for different companies, and that included the NASA German engineers who had been brought back with paperclip and were very familiar with the V-2 rockets. So they put together a proposal for an intermediate range ballistic missile program. Douglas in San Diego in engineering, we took the bait and we came up with another design. Yes, we went down to White Sands Missile Range, where several German V-2s had been brought back from Germany after the war, mm-hmm. and we studied those V-2 rockets. And then we came back to Santa Monica Engineering and designed our own. Now, I've got to explain here, most people in this subject and who are listening to this program have seen photographs of V-2 rockets. They're streamlined. They're pointed on the front. As you move back across the basic missile structure, it gets wider, and then in the middle it starts to get smaller at the back where the engine is. So that's streamlining to operate in atmosphere. Well, there was a group of fellows in engineering at Douglas. I happened to be involved in it. And we said, gee whiz, what did we do, what did Douglas do on the commercial airliners? Lockheed, over in Burbank, built the four-engine Lockheed Electra commercial airlines. The fuselage on their Lockheed starts from a small fuselage. It gets bigger and bigger in the middle. It starts to get smaller and smaller in the back. It's mm-hmm. beautifully streamlined.
Yes.
Okay. Douglas is in competition on airlines for their version. And so Douglas said, gee whiz, we're not going to go 50,000 miles an hour. We don't need to streamline it. It would be a lot cheaper if it just started from a point in the front end as quickly as possible, got to the maximum, and then became just a big tube for the fuselage to put the passengers in the commercial airlines. And gosh, think how much cheaper it's mm-hmm. going to be and how much faster we can manufacture than Lockheed.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So here we are doing the same thing in this intermediate range missile. We get ours, we design it, it's a constant section. It's just a big tube with a point on the front.
Uh-huh.
We have one rocket engine using almost the same time as the type that the Germans had, so both of us use the same engine. So it turns out Douglas wins the contract for $50 million worth of BM-18 missiles, which are just big tubes with a point on the front. We use the German system, their own German system, of moving the launch sites all over Europe. So what we actually did then was we put the missile onto a trailer. We made the trailer so it could erect the missile to a vertical position, stabilize it, and launch it. And then we will take it all back down and we'll move the whole base. Maybe we've got 40 missiles. And we do the same thing. We drive to another location with the trucks. So this is then hard to hit, hard to find. It's sure. never in the same place.
Sure.
We actually then built a full-scale model of the DM-18 missile and built it in the parking lot at Douglas. Now, across the street from Douglas in Santa Monica are all nice homes because we're in a residential area. Mm-hmm. The other side of Douglas is the Santa Monica runway. But on our forward side, they're mm-hmm. all homes.
Mm-hmm.
We erected this missile.
Mm-hmm.
We built the trailer, transporter. We erected it, and everybody thought we were going to fire this.
Ah.
So there was all kinds of articles all over Southern California. Douglas is firing a missile. We got a good lot of good publicity.
That's funny.
But anyway, we won this contract. We built hundreds of these DM-18 inter-range missiles.
Yeah, IRBMs.
IRBMs. And we deployed them, and the wall came down, and things were fixed at least temporarily. Okay? Now, in doing this, Von Braun, back at Huntsville, Alabama, and his office, was really upset and concerned that his engineers, who designed and built the V-2 rockets in Germany,
mm-hmm.
deployed them and fired them in World War II. They lost this contract. So Von Braun got really upset. He got on the airplane. He flew out to LAX, got a car, and drove over to the office entry at the main facility in Santa Monica and wanted an audience of a meeting in engineering.
Yes.
And his statement was, in getting in the corporate office to get into engineering, was he wanted to find out who those unbelievable snot-nosed surfers in engineering at Douglas could possibly come up with something that would be the awe of engineering that the Germans had all over Germany, now in the United States. And so he came out here. And actually, he got into engineering, and that's the first time I met Von Braun.
Hmm.
But he was so upset, he had to go out there and find out who those people were that came up with this thing. They're just surfers, okay? Snot-nosed surfers out in California that did this.
Beach Boys.
They obviously don't know anything.
Yeah.
But I thought that particular story, which really happened, opened up a dialogue between engineering at Santa Monica Douglas and the top engineering, primarily with Dr. Debus, who was the number one guy on the Apollo program.
Yes.
Again, a German scientist.
Remember, folks, Dr. Debus actually ran NASA. He was NASA. He was the spirit, the intellectual genius who made our space program what it was.
But von Braun could not get it out of his head that the snot-nosed surfers in California beat him out. Okay.
Now, what year would this have been approximately, Bill? 50 what?
Like 58, 59 time frame. And okay. We built them, we deployed them, we kept moving them. And
now, these are in Europe. This is
yes, all over Europe. Yeah.
They weren't deployed here, folks. These went to Europe, Cold War, and they were moved all over Western Europe in opposition to the Soviet Union. Okay, go ahead.
And actually, that sort of gets into what you've just said before, you have an individual that's sort of running Russia, and this fellow may have a shorter fuse than we think.
Yeah.
And he can be cool and calm, but we don't know how long that will take place before he initiates some effort.
Right. We didn't trust the Soviets, and that's, you've just summed that up perfectly. We didn't really understand the psyche of their leadership, and it was obviously something of great concern. Yeah.
I would like to say, however, that looking back at the Apollo program, where we've discussed what the actual missions really were, that there was a parallel program going in Russia, because remember, of the probably 30% after the war, of all of the engineering and scientific and hardware that the Germans had developed after the war, we only got like 35%, whereas Russia got probably 70%.
I've never heard it broken down like that. Paperclip, 9,000 scientists, thereabout, and that's about 30% of the spoils of war, the treasure of German intellect and scientific genius. We only got 30% of it. Wow. Didn't know.
And now, I have to say, those percents were what was left in Germany, because remember, Germany start removing all of the space programs, all of the data that the extraterrestrial gave them, all of the vehicles that were given to them to develop their mission to put numerous type of space vehicles in production in underground facilities with thousands of people working to put these vehicles in production. Mm-hmm. That was all removed with extremely large German transport submarines. And like what was left over, and we used those percents, okay, that was, the percents were what were left over, not what had been in Germany several years earlier. All in Antarctica. So this is a different program now. We're talking about something totally different.
So von Braun's V-2 and the V-1 were leftovers. The really good stuff had been extracted when it became clear that Germany was not going to ultimately win the war. So they moved it out of there.
Yes, absolutely. Repeating again, and I hate to repeat things, but we have to get it in our heads what the three missions were of Apollo. And we have to then get to what the real mission was and the agreement between the Third Reich and the Draco reptilians. This is not what's been printed. And we liked Paperclip. We were made to believe there were 30 or 40 Germans that came here.
Right.
And a minute ago, Jeff, you gave the number that were brought here. So once again, the number you came up with is certainly not what the public got.
No.
How many of them came here?
And we don't know that tens of thousands of Germans were removed to Argentina by American and German crews and other countries, by ship, by airplane. We flew them down in long-range DC-4s from Douglas. They were taken over to Germany at the end of the war. One P-51 squadron was checked out on the DC-4, and they began flying. Flight after flight to the Canaries and all the way across to Argentina. Tens of thousands of Germans of the political end of World War II Germany were removed to South America. Go ahead, please.
Oh, absolutely. The mission of Apollo was to get to the moon, phase one, and build a 10,000-man naval research and tactical facility on the moon and in the moon, underground.
Hmm.
Phase two was to go to all the habitable planets in the solar system and or their moons and build naval stations on all of these moons or planets, naval stations.
Got it.
Then phase three was go to the 12 closest stars and on 11 of them build naval stations on the planets in those 11 closest stars. Now, the 12th one was, of course, Alpha Centauri, which has two suns and is a real big problem as far as radiation. So we weren't going to go to the closest one. But that was the mission. Now, secondly, the second part of the mission itself was to put into production in Germany and all over the planet hundreds of thousands of production facilities, building some 17 classes of Draco spaceship, naval spaceships, put them in production, remove the people that the Germans wanted to remove, and enslave every person on the planet. All of us were to be working on different extraterrestrial military vehicles for space. Then Germany was to collectively operate out in the galaxy on those 11 closest stars and put together a program where the Draco Navy and the German Navy space programs operated together out in the galaxy and enslave all the people on those planets.
That was the plan. That was the plan.
That was the plan, but this is literally fantastic. And we came so close to losing that war. We actually didn't win it, but we bombed everything in Europe, but we didn't win that war, but we came very close to winning it. The biggest problem, and I've talked to Frank on this, the biggest problem that the German had was that the information that the Draco Navy gave to Germany were actually documents that were not in German language. Some of the information, particularly much of the technical, was totally different than anything that the Germans had ever seen or heard of. This was a different world that was being presented to them.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic military capability, but they were unable during the last part of the war to get these vehicles finished, train the personnel to operate, and use some of these vehicles that they had in production to finish the war and win it. We didn't get that part disclosed to us either.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Germans were having problems of interpreting extraterrestrial civilization, people who are so advanced over anything on this planet, there was no comparison.
Now, how do you build and design and implement and actually craft these large ships with blueprints you can't read? I mean, that's simplifying it, but that makes it tough, very tough.
Yes, and so it took them longer, much longer than they had planned, to win the war. But there was no question about what was given to them.
Yeah.
Not just information, but giving them brand new shiny UFOs.
You know, when Hitler said, Bill, we have wonder weapons. He wasn't joking. A lot of people think he was just overstating it. No, he had wonder weapons. They just ran out of time and couldn't get them finished. Now, it is said that Germany had atomic bombs, half a dozen of them at least. They didn't use them. We still don't know why. But so when Hitler said wonder weapons, he meant it.
Yeah, he meant it. You're right. Absolutely, Jay. And not just wonder weapons. If you stop and think of other civilizations out in the galaxy who have been operating for thousands and thousands of years throughout the galaxy,
right?
What their lives are, what they do, what they see, what they understand, as a comparison with this naive little thing that we call Earth here. There was no comparison at all. And this is literally driven into the information that the Navy spies, the operatives, brought back to Admiral Riccobata there in the Naval Air Station at San Diego. These operatives brought this information back. They didn't understand it themselves. It was so futuristic, so beyond what they could even conceive. They brought it back. Some of it was in German, yes. But that's easy to interpret the language from manuals that were brought back or given to them. But other things were impossible to understand, and they had themselves in Germany trying to continually develop futuristic mathematics, futuristic astronomy, futuristic understanding of history, their position in the planet, their history in the planet. And of course, they were convinced that they were the top people on the planet. And actually they were, technically. But we had to take that information, try to put it together into packages, which were proposals, mm-hmm. and then I had to fly that information to actually hundreds of top universities, top Navy research facilities, and top airplane company manufacturing facilities, because we didn't have aerospace then.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to explain this to their top engineers and scientists. And I can't explain it because I don't understand it either. And so I give them a contract, a Navy contract, to study this, develop it, try to figure out what it is, and can you make it work? If it was a communication system, it was totally unlike anything that we could even conceive. And yes, some of the stuff was in German, but other stuff was, it was completely not understandable. It was in a situation where we're giving them some background, but we're saying, you guys got to go and try to put this together. We'll try to get you additional information on the subject, but we need you to study this and see if you can put together some sort of a program which would accomplish what the program was. If it was propulsion, it would be one thing. If it's communications, it's something else. Mm-hmm. If it's structures, then we don't have the same material. With that statement, I want to go back to the Navy League Council up in Oregon. And Dr. Michael Salas has written a 18-page report on what I did up in
Medford.
The southern part of Oregon, Medford, Oregon, with the Navy League Council. And I don't want to go in that program now, but if you can, you ought to get Michael's document and read it. And he's gotten verification of what we did. But one of the interesting about that program is I had this Navy League Council that I started. And I had a telephone call from a gentleman in the Navy, not the Navy League, and he wanted to have breakfast with me at the Red Lion Hotel there in Medford.
Uh-huh.
And I had had this Navy League Council operating for over 2 years. And so it turns out this fellow is a lieutenant, or is a full commander, Navy commander, and he had been working at Area 51 and two other areas much larger than 51, underground. And his job there, because he was a physicist, his job was just to understand the material that the UFOs are made out of, okay? He had spent 7 years trying to do this, and mm-hmm. he couldn't analyze it. He couldn't come up with what it was. He had all unlimited funds to do this.
The best instrumentation, the best science, and he couldn't do it. Wow.
And he couldn't do this. Mm-hmm. So they put him out to pasture, and we had a Navy training reserve center there at Medford. And so I had the commander at the reserve center was also part of our Navy League Council because we had our meetings there. And he was a nice fellow, but in some ways I didn't care for some of the things that he was doing. Anyway, he got the orders that a new guy was going to take over his job. This is the commander from Area 51. So they put the commander out to pasture to keep him there for a couple of 3 years, he and his family, to try to let him calm down and then take him back to Area 51. But in the meantime, they gave him this job that's not a big job. It's just a reserve center. The fellow that he replaced called me, and he wanted to talk me over the red line, and he told me he was being replaced. And I didn't know that the other fellow was going to replace him. So we talked in the corner of the dining room there for 4 hours. Now listen to this.
Hmm.
This fellow was being transferred from commander of the reserve base in Medford, mm-hmm. and he was transferred to the naval base San Diego. He was assigned a landing assault aircraft carrier.
Right.
Now, landing assault aircraft carriers are for marine operations. These carriers are several decks higher than a regular nuclear carrier. But they have tremendous sides, well decks, and so in the well deck they have all these landing transport vehicles with tanks in them. And the way they operate this ship is that they flood the rear two-thirds, about two-thirds of the hull is a big cavern. And they flood it. The ship sort of sinks on the aft side. They open up the doors. The waters come in. The tank boats float out, and they go to the beach with the Marines on it on a naval training operation.
Mm-hmm.
He was convinced, this commander was convinced, he had his hand on my shoulder talking to me in the Red Lion restaurant, and he said, I know I can't do this. I've been assigned it. I can't do it. I'm going to give the wrong command, and I'm going to flood the ship, and it's going to sink, and all those guys are going to die. I know this is what's going to happen. And you can't believe that story, but that's true. And this fella did get sent down there. He did take it over, and I know he operated on it for at least 8 months before they removed him.
We
found
this out
later. He couldn't take it. He knew he was going to give a wrong order and flood the ship and sink it.
Gee, all right. Bill,
just a side story.
Can you hold that, Bill? I want you to hold that side story. We have to pause for a few minutes now. Just hold that side story, if you would, and we'll come right back. And go get yourself a drink of water or whatever, and we'll continue in just a few minutes with Mr. William Tompkins. And look on the right side of the featured stories at Rents, and you'll find a whole archive of all Bill's appearances here, some other articles that are pertinent to them, including Dr. Michael Sala's latest one, which elaborates on the issue of Admiral Rico Botta. It's a remarkable story. It's up there. It's the Exopolitics site, exopolitics.org. We've added that to the box on the right side that has all the Bill Tompkins radio appearances there. Okay, lots to look at and study and be intrigued by. Back in a minute.